Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, September 13th. Today, we're talking to the Colorado Sun's environmental reporter Michael Booth about how air pollution damages the gut biome of infants, as well as a movement to place electric vehicle chargers in rural Colorado. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance provides workers' comp insurance and was named one of the most community-minded companies in Colorado for the third year in a row. Last year, Pinnacle donated $1.5 million in grants, donations, and scholarships to Colorado communities. Learn how Pinnacle puts care to work at pinnacle.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. American prospectors trespassed on the massive Ute Reservation in western Colorado Territory in the early 1870s, but the federal government hesitated to restrain its own citizens, even though an 1868 treaty with the Utes demanded just that. To prevent conflict, Commissioner Felix Bruneau negotiated a new deal that ceded the San Juan Mountains region to the United States. This proposal, made on this day in 1873, became known as the Bruneau Treaty. American interest in the San Juans grew as smelting technology improved, the General Mining Act of 1872 promoted mining on federal land, and the Panic of 1873 all converged to fuel a boom in digging wealth out of the ground. Legal niceties like the boundaries of American Indian reservations offered little impediment. After Ute factions complained of the transgressions, federal agents sought to amend the reserve's limits. A council in August 1872 sought to expand American rights, but the Utes demanded enforcement of the 1868 treaty. That November, Charles Adams and Sawatch businessman Otto Mears escorted prominent Utes, including Tabawache Ure and his wife, to the East Coast. The trip was intended to awe native cultures into submission. The Utes visited Washington, D.C., New York City, and other major cities, but once again rejected any new deal. At another council at Los Pinos in 1873, Bruneau encouraged the Utes to surrender to legalize the San Juan interlopers. Ure, who apparently sought peace at almost any cost, convinced members of the other Ute factions to back the cession. Federal agents rewarded him with an annual annuity and a farm near present-day Montrose, which reinforced the view among many Utes that Ure was an American puppet. The farm survives today as History Colorado's Ute Indian Museum. Before we continue, a message from our sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. Today, we are visiting with the Sun's environment reporter, Michael Booth. Hi, Mike. Thanks for stopping by.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me on. Always appreciate it.
Ah, ditto. Today, a couple things I'd like to talk about, but certainly one of them is this study, really, I think, that came out of the University of Colorado about how particle pollution damages the gut biome in infants and produces inflammatory disease. Now, you know, we know that inflammation itself causes all sorts of disease in the human body, in mammals. And I don't think, though, that we really have drilled down on how young it can affect infants until this study. Can you tell us a little bit about what they discovered?
Yeah, it really helps us dig into this assumption we all make, and it's an assumption based on reality, which is that air pollution is bad for health. And there are plenty of studies that have been done about lungs and linking air pollution to zip codes and the health of people living in that zip code that are close to a lot of pollution. But they really need to keep going and make it even more definitive. And a University of Colorado Boulder researcher who had access to a pretty interesting and very valuable cohort of babies in Southern California, which has very similar conditions in terms of the air and the temperatures and the weather to Colorado. When she was a graduate student and also a PhD candidate at University of Southern California, there's an ongoing study of mothers who are breastfeeding there, and primarily Latino mothers. And they have given permission for some of their information to be used for other kinds of studies. And she was able to use their genetic information of these babies. And so what they do is they take the genetic information about the babies and then follow them and overlay the information about where they live and their demographic background with hourly information from the EPA about air monitors in the areas where they live. And when they overlay those two things, they can see how that group of babies is being impacted differently health-wise than the people in the control groups and people all around them. And they've found some pretty startlingly bad reactions to particulate pollution, which is that created by automobile exhaust, by smokestacks from coal-fired power plants and from other industrial smokestacks, and from wildfire smoke, which obviously affects both Southern California and Colorado and many places in the West. Babies have a biome. We all have a gut biome. There's good bacteria and bad bacteria in our gut. When it gets out of balance, bad things happen. And that what they found is real strong connections between a higher presence of air pollution and higher presence of the bad bacteria, the inflammatory bacteria in these babies' guts.
One of the things we talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago was ozone problems getting worse, you know, in the Front Range and elsewhere. And how I think the largest contributor to that, if I recall, was like background and, you know, quote unquote, natural sources. So fires, plant-based emissions, things like that. And it sounds like in addition to affecting, you know, adults in the area, this is going all the way down to infants. And is it being found in the mother's breast milk too and being passed to the children?
No, they still want mothers to, number one thing they can do for their kids is to continue to breastfeed as long as they are possible, economically possible, just demographically possible for their group, to try to continue that as long as possible. Always the healthiest thing you can do for your baby, if it's possible. What happens is that the babies breathe in that particulate pollution, and then it affects their gut inflammation. And what inflammation causes is inflammatory related diseases like asthma, like diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and other problems later in life. And what the reason it makes a connection to other things that we've been writing about so much, including ozone, is that the argument from environmental justice groups and environmental advocates for a long time is that air pollution disproportionately impacts the people who are stuck living next to it, which is often low income, often minority groups in America, and especially in both Colorado and Southern California, Latino groups that live in North Denver, for example, or Pueblo, or in Southern Adams County and are stuck next to I-70, I-25, 270, I-76, and the Suncor plant and the Cherokee power plant that's there and the huge Comanche 3 plant in Pueblo. And so therefore it affects them disproportionately, and therefore the state, when it spends money in the future on highways and on other things and controlling air pollution, should be looking out at studies like this and saying, we need to do more, we need to do a better job for this group.
Absolutely. And will the researcher in Boulder and her team, are they going to follow these infants, you know, as they grow and continue to track them in and around, like you said, North Denver, Adams County, Pueblo?
Yes. And they want to see what happens to the Southern California group. Do these changes continue through age like 6? They now have the revenue or the money they need, the funding they need to follow this group through age 6. They're very grateful for that. That will give them long-term studies they need to say, maybe this is a transitory thing and it doesn't have a big impact later on in life. Or perhaps they will find that these babies that have been impacted already, it does turn into inflammatory diseases that affect their whole life. So they will be following that, and they will be following up with more reports that we will follow up on as well.
Well, thanks for keeping us informed on that. And there was another thing that is going to be, I believe, on ColoradoSun.com today, discussing, you know, part of reducing air pollution is the move to electric vehicles. And you have some news on how that might be rolled out in smaller towns around Colorado. What's the news there?
So in order to electrify Colorado and keep people transitioning to electric vehicles, which can run on cleaner generated electricity like wind and solar, as Colorado is transitioning to, instead of fossil fuels, you need to get rid of people's range anxiety. And we've talked about that before. People get hinky about buying an electric vehicle if they know they take a lot of 200, 300 mile trips to Western Colorado, to Eastern Colorado, and are worried they're not going to have a place to charge up. And they'll be stuck by the side of the road with a dead battery. So in order to do that, you need to get fast charging stations about every 30 miles throughout the places where people travel. That's a 30-mile limit that people find more comforting in their daily lives. And so you need to push those out into rural areas as well. There is a technology solution that's now available for places like Julesburg, which has the first one of this company called FreeWire. So you don't have the big, robust power grid that can get you fast chargers in every part of rural Colorado. This company came up with a solution where they use a battery pack to basically store the energy and give it to your car battery all at once in a big boost. And it'll let you have, in effect, the Electrify America or charge point boost of a fast charger, but in a rural area that doesn't have as robust a grid. And so Julesburg has this one at the Wagon Wheel, which a lot of us have passed on I-76, and they're going to be building more of them throughout Colorado.
Oh, that's great. So we've got this first spot on the Eastern Plains covered. Have they said what other communities they're going to focus on?
They haven't named names, but they're working on contracts, and it's proving very attractive. The Colorado Energy Office is involved with grants. They like the technology a lot. They are responsible for using government money to promote the rural chargers and electrification of Colorado. And the fact that they have sort of stamped this one with their endorsement of $50,000 in a state grant means that they will be supporting building more of them in other parts of Colorado, and everybody's excited about that.
That's great. Is FreeWire doing this in other states, or is Colorado kind of the testing ground?
They're definitely national. And what they like about, and other people like about their system, is it's more modular than some of these fast charging stations that are kind of hardwired. You can pick this thing up with a forklift, as they say, and move it around you want it in a different part of town, or if you want to take it across country and install it somewhere else. And so they're hoping that it can be a much faster, they call it shovel ready, kind of plug and play system to electrify the whole country much faster.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to reading about that later today. Thank you. For our listeners, if you have any thoughts or questions about the podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And thanks to Mike and everyone who helped produce today's podcast, and to our production partners, Pirate Audio. And have a wonderful day. We sincerely hope that you can join us for tomorrow's Daily Sunup.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Pressure on the Colorado River has intensified as the driest 22-year stretch in the past 1,200 years has gripped the southwest. In 2000, Lake Mead and Lake Powell were about 95% full. Today, they are down to roughly 27%. From California's farmers in the Imperial Valley to families in Mexico and the tribal reservations, millions of people are facing water restrictions. As the Colorado River Compact, which governs the use of water, nears its 100th anniversary, the Colorado Sun is partnering with 5 newsrooms across the West for a week-long series digging into the river crisis. Go to coloradosun.com to read the first 2 days of reporting. Colorado Democrats are challenging the possible recall of State Senator Kevin Priola and filed a lawsuit Monday questioning where signatures should be collected and the voting should occur. Priola, who last month switched his party affiliation to Democrat from Republican, currently represents District 25, a toss-up district in the northeast Denver suburbs. But starting in January, because of last year's redistricting process, he will represent District 13, a far more conservative district. The lawsuit argues that Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, a Democrat, erred in her decision to have the recall in District 13 since Priola doesn't currently represent that district. The FAA wants airlines using Denver International Airport to rethink a long-standing practice after the agency issued a stark safety warning to pilots about elevated mid-air collision dangers near the airport. The FAA says roughly 1 in 5 airline crews using 2 closely spaced runways at the Denver airport turn off collision avoidance technology to prevent what are called nuisance alerts. The agency has allowed the procedure for more than a decade, but now wants airlines to reassess that practice, arguing that landing with the technology turned off could result in significant risks. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.